carefully tended to in hopes of making food grow. The mission had changed, but the feeling in the room was the same. It was a place of order, a tangible bit of progress that set Nor at ease. "They have been working around the clock, Majesty," Darai murmured as he led her down the aisle. The scientists bowed their heads as she passed, Zahn behind her like a living shadow. Another metal door stood at the back of the room. Zahn entered in the code to unlock the private lab of her lead scientist, Ecclesia, and the door opened instantly. The two-headed scientist alone understood Nor's passion for destruction, and her equal desire to make it a true work of art. Together they would give the galaxy a show, and every eye would be watching. Ecclesia stood behind a lab table with her back to Nor. In front of her, rows and rows of glowing silver vials lined up like tiny soldiers awaiting their orders. Zahn didn't follow as Darai and Nor stepped forward, remaining back to guard the door. Nor approached the table slowly, appraising the view. Half of her life had passed since the idea for Zenith had bloomed in her mind, and only now, after years of dreaming, was her weapon finally coming to life.
"Ah, my queen,"
Ecclesia's two voices said at once. Nor looked up as her head scientist shuffled over. To anyone else, Ecclesia was a shocking sight. But Nor had spent years in her presence watching the two-headed woman work. Two brains should have meant two separate people, but Ecclesia's heads worked together as if they were one. The right head held her rational side and could converse for hours without skipping a beat. The left head was more off-kilter, but it was the part of Ecclesia that Nor perhaps admired the most. It allowed her to dream endlessly until even the most irrational ideas became possible. "Are you in the final stages of finishing the weapon yet?" Nor asked. Ecclesia's two heads swung around to look at the lab table, both hands grappling for a single silver vial. The glass clinked as the scientist produced one, lifting it out of its case and holding it up to the light.
"Slowly, you dolt!" the right head screeched to the left.
The left head huffed in annoyance.
"I'm merely trying to give our queen a glimpse of her new toy."
"It's a wonder I've been able to put up with you all these years," the right head retorted.
"You haven't a choice, my dear," the left said back.
Both heads glared at each other, the right with short reddish-brown hair sticking out like flames, the left with pale blonde curls coiled tight against her skull. Nor cleared her throat.
"My patience is running low."
Ecclesia nodded her heads, then held out the vial.
"Steady now, my queen," the right head said.
Nor cradled the vial in her hands like a newly polished gem. It sparkled in the dim light of the lab, and it was warm to the touch rather than cool like she'd assumed it would be.
"Each vial holds thousands of doses," the right head told Nor.
"Now we just need someone to play with," the left head added.
"A test subject," the right corrected.
Ecclesia looked expectantly at Nor.
"That has been taken care of," Nor said. She raised her gloved hand to signal Zahn's attention.
"Order the guards to bring forth the subject."
Behind her, Zahn pressed a button on his wrist comm, then whispered a command into it. Less than a minute later, a knock sounded at the door, and he strode forward to open it. In the doorway stood a ragged-looking woman, struggling against her bonds as two guards hauled her inside.
"Queen Nor, please grant me your mercy."
The warden of Lunamere fell to her knees before Nor, her bound wrists held out before her as if in prayer. Nor peered down her nose at the traitor.
"You had one of the Unified System's most wanted fugitives in my prison, and instead of keeping her there, where she could have been persuaded to join the right side of the galaxy, you lost her. Not only that, but an entire squadron of guards is dead. The prisoner from Arcardius is missing, and my best revivalist is mysteriously absent from her post. And you dare ask me for mercy? The warden sobbed at Nor's feet. Please. Ecclesia, Nor said, not taking her eyes from the pathetic woman before her. The scientist hurried to stand by Nor's side. Here is your first living trial, and for the sake of this traitor here, let us all hope that it works. The warden screamed as the guards hauled her to her feet. The sound intensified as they strapped her to a chair in the corner of the room. The screams turned to furious moans as they gagged her. Then a vial of silver liquid was produced, almost glowing beneath the overhead lamps. Ecclesia looked to Nor with four bright, hungry eyes. "Would you like to do the honors, Majesty?" Nor looked upon the scene with a sudden warmth in her heart as she listened to the warden's unrelenting moans. "I came for a show," Nor said. "Give me one to remember." "With pleasure," Ecclesia's two heads said at once. Darai and Zahn appeared at Nor's sides, flanking her like soldiers. As Ecclesia unstoppered the vial, Zahn took Nor's hand in his. They held on to each other, their heartbeats pulsing in time as they watched Nor's greatest dream come to fruition.
Chapter 30 Claren, Year 24 The girl was born to die. She'd always known it. Had been preparing for it since the day she was created. Since her yielding and throughout all the years spent working to get to where she was, the girl had remembered the dream. For how could she ever forget? In her mind, she saw it now. A burning black and red palace. A crumbling planet starved for life, nearly ready to explode in the midst of a battle. A king trying desperately to save his people. A starship heading across the skies, delivering one chance at a change of fate.
"Claren, it's time."
She opened her eyes. The king of Zenterra knelt before her, his eyes reddened and full of tears. His forehead creased with worry. He'd aged so much since the war began. But he was still handsome. Still the man who had given her and Nor a wonderful life.
"Time?"
she asked. He nodded and held a hand out to her.
"The threat to the palace was true. The soldiers are closing in, and half my troops are off-planet."
He inhaled a trembling, defeated breath.
"I fear that they will win, Claren. The unified systems will destroy us soon."
"There's still hope," she whispered. He shook his head.
"No, my heart. Hope is as dead as our planet. I'm going to continue this war, but time is fleeting. We must hide now before they reach the palace gates."
She let her husband sweep the blankets back and help her from their bed. The queen had fallen ill over the past several months, her body worn from breathing the tainted, war-torn air on the planet. Even with the iron shutters closed, she could still make out the hint of greenish light slipping through the edges of the window, could still feel the rattle in her lungs with each breath she took. Now she could hear the whine of ships outside, the shouts of soldiers as yet another battle waged. How many more would there be? She could hear the screech of ammunition seeking out living targets. She could nearly taste the hot metallic tang of all the blood that had been spilled already. All the lives lost in the endless fighting. Women, men, children. No one on Zenterra was safe. So many years the planet had held on to life. And today the queen had a choice. She already knew, as she dreamed years ago, which one she would make. Her body was racked with trembles as she lifted her hands to her husband's face. She wasn't supposed to feel this way for him, for the life they had made together, for the daughter they shared. just thinking of Noor, so young, so unprepared for what was to come. Tears slipped down the queen's cheeks. She wished she could go back. She wished she could change that passionate night they had shared, the careless days after, and the tonic she'd forgotten to take. "Go to the bunker," she whispered. She looked into his eyes, leveled her voice to a calm state of solid steel. "Take Noor with you. Go now." He parted his lips to speak, but she kissed him with all the fierceness in her heart, all the fire of the battle raging beyond. Behind her, Darai slipped from the shadows, his ruined face grim as he watched the queen draw herself away from her king.
"I will care for them as I have cared for you,"
Darai said, placing a hand on the queen's elbow to steady her.
"Remember the mission, Clarin."
Together they watched the king leave the room without looking back. She kept her eyes on him as she spoke.
"I fear I am not strong enough, that all these years have made me weak, that love has made me weak." "We do not have room for love, my queen, just as we do not have room for you to remain here, wasting away where there is no hope."
Darai squeezed her elbow and forced her to pull her gaze from the retreating king.
"You will go and create it for us. You will carry on toward our goal. You are the strongest yielded I have ever known."
"And my child?" the queen asked. "What of her?"
"Where you go, she cannot follow."
The queen's heart twisted in her chest. Darai smiled sadly at her, even though she knew it pained him because of his scars.
"The light will guide her, just as it continues to guide you."
The queen placed a kiss on his cheek, committing his face to memory. Somewhere outside the palace, screams rang out. There was an explosion, a rattling that shook the walls. The soldiers were here. Clarin gripped Darai's hands in hers.
"You will train her in the truth. You will see to it that she is strong."
His eyes were like fire.
"I swear it upon the light. I swear it upon the conduit."
The queen smiled, thinking of how fiercely her daughter always held on to things, how stubborn she was, how devilishly determined. "She will be a great queen, Darai. Teach her, just as I would have taught her, that she should always choose her duty over her heart." Even now she could feel her own shattering in her chest.
"Go into the next world, my yielded,"
Darai said, placing a finger beneath her chin, lifting her gaze to his.
"Do not look back."
The queen swept from the room. She did not pause even as smoke began to curl through the hallways, even as footsteps pounded up the spiral stairs and the dark forms of her soldiers swam into view, fighting back the intruders who dared enter her crumbling palace. No bullets touched her skin as she walked gracefully to the doors. No one stopped her as she unlocked them and slipped out into the battle raging beyond. Enemy soldiers swarmed at her at once. Outside the palace walls sat a starship coated in deepest blue, the symbol of an exploding star on its side. The ramp was already open as a figure marched down it, guards flanking his sides. He marched slowly to greet her. That devil from her dreams with eyes like the sky.
"What's this?"
he asked.
"A Zen-Terran rat caught wandering outside her cage?"
"General Cortaz," the queen said. She smiled at him, a practiced thing that had yet to fail her, and was pleased to feel the familiar warm spark ignite in her chest when their eyes met. When, through his war-torn hatred, he noticed her beauty and hungered for more.
"Take the fool queen aboard,"
General Cyprian Cortaz commanded,
"as my personal prisoner."
She did not fight the soldiers as they escorted her onto the ship, as her feet crunched across Zen-Terran soil one last time. She did not look back at the palace, not even once. Her husband was wrong. Hope was not dead. Hope, in the form of the Queen's sacrifice, had only just flickered to life.
Chapter 31 Androma.
What are you doing? Andy whirled around. Fallen stood at the bottom of the staircase with his arms crossed over his chest, his hair rumpled as if he'd just woken from a long sleep, or finally resurfaced from hours of painting abstract images on the canvases littered about his room. He'd never spoken to Andy much before she was a specter, and now, even with her living in his home, their rooms a short walk away from each other's, he'd spoken to her even less. But he always seemed to be listening when she and Kaylee were giggling about the latest drama to spill across the streets of Arcadius. During meals, when Andy and the other specters stood guard, she'd watch him curiously. Valin usually sat in the farthest seat from his father, hunched forward as if he were battling some deep, silent pain. Sometimes she'd catch him staring at her with his strange, unblinking hazel eyes, his paint-stained fingers gripping his golden fork like a weapon he didn't want to use. And several times over the years, Andy had caught Valin following her and Kaylee through the twisting halls of the estate, quickly ducking into open doorways with heat flaming on his cheeks when she'd whirled around to catch him, worried it was an intruder come to harm Kaylee. Valin Cortaz was silent and strange, a mystery Andy really had no interest in cracking. And yet, despite his oddities, the older students at the Arcadian Academy always talked about him, whispered his name in the halls in between classes when he shuffled past, his shoelaces undone, splatters of paint on his rumpled uniform. General Cortaz hadn't even assigned a full-time specter for Valin. Kaylee said it was because he wasn't the heir, but Andy had always wondered. The tension between father and son was palpable. It made for awkward meetings when the whole family and their specters were present. "I asked you a question," Valin said now from the bottom of the stairs. "And I don't have to answer," Kaylee tossed her pale hair over her shoulder, the polar opposite to Valin's dark brown. Valin frowned. "I was asking Androma." Andy's mouth opened. Valin never tried to speak to her directly, and now he was angry, looking at her like she was trying to steal his best friend. "We're going to have some fun, Valin," Andy said. "Maybe you should join us, put down the paintbrushes for a little while, and see the real world." She hadn't meant it rudely, but his mouth twisted at her words. And then his eyes fell on the silver ignition card clutched in Kaylee's hand. "You're not going anywhere, not with that." He started up the stairs, his bare feet soundless with each step. "That's enough, Valin!" Kaylee whined like a caged dog as she nudged Andy farther up the staircase. "Come on, Andy, he's not going to stop us." "I'll wake up father," Valin threatened. Kaylee laughed. "You wouldn't dare." Andy stared down at Valin, who, before tonight, had always seemed so quiet, so focused on things inside of himself rather than the world around him. "There isn't room for three in the ship," Kaylee said. He continued upward anyway. "You can't come!" "Kells." Valin said her nickname with a heavy sigh. He looked to Andy, frowning again. "You aren't going to stop this?" "Of course she's not," Kaylee said. "Come on, Valin, it's my birthday." Valin frowned. "You're not yourself when you're with her, Kells. Don't do this. It's not a good idea. Just come down. I'll walk you back to your room." Kaylee circled her arm through Andy's. "I'm better when I'm with Andy, Valin. You're just jealous because no one is interested in getting on a ship alone with you." Andy blinked in surprise as Valin froze. He stared up at Kaylee like she'd just shattered his heart. And maybe she had. "Don't come crying to me when father catches you," he whispered. Then his face warped with a sad smile. "Happy birthday, Kaylee. I hope it's everything you want it to be." He turned, slinking back down the stairs. For a moment, Andy wondered if maybe he was right. Maybe they shouldn't go. Again, that little voice whispered, "This is a mistake. This isn't in your orders. Your orders are to keep her safe, Androma, not keep her happy." But as Andy stared down at the card in her charge's hand, the thrill of the night swept over her. A promise that adventure was waiting, and a ship with engines larger than any she'd ever had in her control at the Academy. Let's go, Kaylee. She tugged her friend along with her, up the stairs and out the door to the docking pad. The transport sat waiting for them, a silver beast crouching in the moonlight. Andy screeched with laughter as Kaylee chased her across the platform, the wind in their hair, the kiss of the night on their skin. Tonight, they would be more than just a specter in her charge. They'd be partners in crime, girls on a mission, out to tear apart the silent skies.
Chapter 32 Lyra. It had been 86,400 seconds since the timer started on their mission, and not for a moment had Lyra allowed herself to stop moving. She paced back and forth on the Marauder, her steps whisper silent as she worried her way past Andy's empty captain's chair. So many nights she'd found her captain here, scratching tallies into her swords, neck bent as if pressed down by the weight of her sins. The first part of the mission had gone as planned. Andy and Dex had gone in, the latter assuming they'd stick to his plan. Little did Dextro Arez know that the Marauders weren't up for following his lead. They'd executed Plan B with the ultimate amount of finesse. Lyra would never forget the moment Breck sent Dex flying across the pub with a single kick to his gut, the snarl on the Lunamere guards' faces as Dex destroyed their card game, Krev scattered across the pub for anyone to claim. After the sparks had gone off and the Lunamere warden had arrived, Lyra and the crew had hightailed their way out of that putrid pub as fast as their legs would allow. The last she saw of Andy was when she turned to face the warden and her inevitable transport to Lunamere. They'd locked eyes across the pub, and as Zen Terran guards surrounded Andy, she'd sent one desperate message to Lyra. Run! It wasn't a suggestion born out of fear. It was an order. Despite everything in her, Lyra had obeyed. But with every step, she'd felt like a traitor. Your captain is in chains, a voice whispered in the back of her mind. You should be by her side. Instead, you're running. All you ever do is run. Run from your duties. Run from your family. The voice, as always, had sounded like Lon's, chest deep, full of knowing and love all at once. Lyra had shoved it away, forced herself onto the Marauder, her hands clutching the throttle as she reversed away from the old, crumbling satellite's docking bay. This was all part of the plan, and yet Lyra couldn't help but feel as if she'd just repeated an act she'd done 4 years ago. Running from what you love most. Lon's voice ghosted into her mind again. As she'd flown the Marauder away from dark matter, Lyra could only hope and pray to the God Stars that Andy and Dex would make it back out alive and with Valin Cortas in tow. Hopefully Andy and Valin would be uninjured. Dextro she didn't care a single star about. She knew enough about the damage she'd once caused Andy to wish the worst upon him. It took a lot to break a woman like Andy, and yet somehow he had managed to do it. I'm bored, Gilly said, interrupting Lyra's thoughts. I wish Dex were here. The pilot looked up from the dark dash before her. What? Gilly shrugged. He's funny. I like him. He's not funny, Lyra said. He's Andy's enemy, and therefore he is our enemy. And he's late. A full 24 hours after leaving dark matter, the Marauder powered down into survival mode to avoid detection, sat like a dark shadow in the junkyard. The irony of pretending to be dead in the air when only days ago, Dex's men had literally killed the ship in order to board it and start this entire mission process in the first place, was not lost on Lyra. Lyra's scales sizzled as another wave of newly formed hatred swept into her. You're going to melt the dash, Breck said. Lyra sighed and shook out her palms. Remove the anger, she told herself. Remove it, because you're strong enough. Find the control. It had been far too long. Andy and Dex were supposed to be out of Lunamere by now, safely back on board the ship. They should have already left the ship graveyard behind, a mere speck in the distance. But now, they were 30 minutes late. 30 minutes far too late. Lyra twiddled her thumbs, not knowing what to do with her hands otherwise. A tight knot had formed in her chest, one that refused to relinquish its grip no matter how deeply she breathed. What was the cause of the delay? Had something gone wrong in the dark halls of Lunamere? She couldn't simply patch into her captain's channel. The distance between them was too great. "I can't wait any longer," Lyra said to the girls, gaining their attention. Gilly, who was flipped upside down on her chair, sat upright. "Andy ordered us to stay put. Do you want to disobey her?" "Not entirely," Lyra said, shaking her head. "What are you going to do, then? We aren't just going to leave them behind, right?" she asked, eyes wide with anxiety. "Of course not, Gilly," Breck answered for Lyra. "She's just... concerned." Breck narrowed her eyes at Lyra in warning. A private message from the gunner flashed across her feed. "Keep it together. Don't scare the kid." Sometimes Lyra forgot how young Gilly was. Her youth had been pulled out from under her by the awful things done to her in the past, and her innocence certainly hadn't been restored by the road she now followed with the girls. But she didn't know the truth, and neither did Breck. Lyra frowned as she thought about what Andy had commanded just before they entered Dark Matter. If they didn't return by the designated time, the girls were to save themselves. They were to hide in the darkest hole they could find until they were long forgotten by General Cortes and his lackeys. Lyra's scales lit up again. She'd followed Andy's other orders, but this was not one she could obey. How could they even trust Soyina? She'd checked out by their snooping, and yet Lyra didn't truly trust anyone in this galaxy. No one could, with its twisted history. Another minor problem was the fact that, for the second time this week, Lyra had been forced to assume her role of second-in-command. She hated the title, and wished she could discard it as easily as Breck and Gilly discarded used bullet casings. If it was just Lyra alone on this ship, without Breck and Gilly, she would storm Lunamere herself until she found Andy, dead or alive. It was the very least she could do for the sake of their long friendship, for the chance at a real life, without the heart-clenching, back-breaking responsibility that waited for her back on Adhira. But when the other two girls' lives were on the line, Lyra forced her emotions aside, as adherents would, and told herself they had to stay put. "I'll be back," Lyra said, turning on her heel. "Where are you going?" Breck asked. When Lyra didn't answer, she added, "Lyra?"
"You know she never tells us," Gilly whispered back,
though Lyra heard it as she left the room.
"Play me in a game of fleet while we wait?"
Breck sighed. "Why, so you can slaughter me again? And where is Alfie, anyhow?"
"I'll tell you if you play me in fleet," Gilly offered.
Their voices trailed off as Lyra exited the bridge, stomped down the hallway, and deftly climbed down the ladder hatch onto the deck below. The cool metal felt like heaven on her bare feet. Another ladder, a few quick, graceful strides across the catwalk, and she found herself storming through the door at the end of the hall into her quarters. Her room was clean, organized, and mostly empty, save for the single welded bookshelf, which held her entire collection of romance novels on handheld pads, each with stories of pilots who stole their lovers away on adventures across the skies. Andy herself had gifted the entire collection to Lyra on her aging day last year. Lyra had requested a room alone. Breck and Gilly shared the one across from her, which was stacked with soft, overflowing bunks, while Andy took the captain's quarters above. But Lyra? She enjoyed time to get lost in her thoughts, and she enjoyed the domed window wall that looked out into endless, swirling outer space. No matter where the Marauder traveled, it was always a glorious view, ever-changing through the beryllium walls. Today, Lyra gazed out upon the hull of a broken warship, battered and melted into a mere hunk of waste,
The Zen-Terran insignia was half missing on one side. What size of bomb, Lyra wondered, had been used on that ship? The cataclysm was more of a mystery to her than to the others, having come from a planet that was hell-bent on peace. Lyra chose not to study it. She was too afraid to discover what a leader would have to do when faced with the horrific prospect of war. She sighed and turned her back on the window wall. A small metal cot was pressed up against it. She sank onto the firm metal slab, relishing the cold on her back. It was here that she could find a few moments of peace during their busiest days, here that she could work out the constant barrage of questions and thoughts that peppered her mind day in and day out. She'd made a lot of choices since leaving Adhira. All of them had involved Andy and the girls. They worked together as a unit, a single organism with many arms and legs, some smaller than others, some with more scars or markings, but still one and the same once all was said and done. Some might say that the girls were soulless, but they were Lyra's soul, and if she had to bet on it, she'd say that she was part of theirs, too. For years, Lyra had dedicated her life to this crew. She had come here as a girl dreaming of freedom. Now, she had it in her grasp. Only General Cortes was in the way of that, and if anything happened to Andy, after all she'd been through, especially on this mission, Lyra would never forgive herself for letting Andy go in alone. She hated to think it, but if anything happened to Andy, Lyra would be in charge. What would she do then? You'd run, Lon's voice echoed again, because power and responsibility are too much for you, little buck. But that wasn't entirely true. Lyra piloted the Marauder. She held the lives of Andy and the girls in her hands each time they set out onto a new mission. She sighed, closing her eyes, chasing away the demons. They weren't as large or as horrifying as those of the other girls, Lyra knew, and yet they still plagued her. When Lyra's father died from Wexen pox, a great sweeping disease that took out many on Adhira, her mother had shut down. Then she'd drowned herself in bottles of gris, refusing help when the need for the drink became too strong. Eventually, she left in the night without a word, leaving Lyra and her twin brother, Lon, behind. The last Lyra had heard, her mother was still living on Adhira, near the Endless Sea, shacking it up with a guild man who drank more than the sea creatures he made his living catching. Without their mother's sister, Lyra and Lon would have been alone as children. But their aunt had swept into their lives, welcoming them into her home. They were well cared for, well loved. But each year they grew, and with growth came responsibility. The family career. Their aunt had no children to take up the job when she died, and so the offer had gone to Lyra. She'd refused it, time and time again. She'd spent her days training and studying how to pilot a ship, instead of attending lessons with her aunt. Lon had encouraged her all along, knowing it gave her joy, but hoping it would not be what determined her future. And so when Lyra had packed her bags and left, she'd never forget the look on her twin's face. As if she'd just betrayed him, as if she'd reopened the wound their mother gave them both years before. It was the very same look Lyra thought she saw in Andy's eyes when Lyra left her in chains, surrounded by guards in dark matter. It was just her mind playing tricks, pulling at her weakness. Andy had planned for that capture to happen, step by step, but seeing it play out was an entirely different thing. Again, Lyra's scales heated. Again, she forced them to cool. It was why she slept on metal, and with no sheets, because the dreams became too real, and by the time she'd awoken, any bedclothes would have burned to cinders anyway. A knock on the door pulled Lyra from her thoughts. It swung open, revealing Breck and Gilly again. "I'm just resting," Lyra blurted out. A stupid, unbelievable lie. Breck frowned, her hands on her hips. She had to duck to keep her head from hitting the doorway as she entered. "You're sulking, Lyra," And marauders don't sulk alone. Gilly tossed a deck of cards onto Lyra's lap, an expensive edition of Fleet, a game widely played across Mirabelle.
I just beat Breck, she said, twirling one of her red braids around her finger. And I think I would also like to beat you.
Lyra sighed. She couldn't be beaten. Gilly knew it. But she also knew how to make Lyra feel better when it felt as if the galaxy was pressing in around her. Come on, then, Lyra said, waving the girls inside. Gilly giggled and settled cross-legged on Lyra's metal cot, smiling as she dealt out the glowing cards. Lyra looked down at her hand. A good set of armor, a solid few soldiers. But her weapon? Of course, a Godstar's damned sword. It was as if fate was laughing at Lyra, reminding her constantly of Andy's absence on the ship.
What if they don't make it out?
Gilly asked, laying down her first card. An explorer ship, quickly followed by a fully trained pilot. Plenty of attack power. Lyra cleared her throat, staring out the window at the floating pieces of twisted metal as she laid down a card to cancel Gilly's attack ability for the turn. They'll make it out, Lyra said, even though she herself didn't quite believe it. Trust me. And if you can't trust me, then trust Andy.
We trust you, Breck said.
She frowned as Lyra dug into her pocket and popped a chunk of moon chew into her mouth.
If you keep chewing that stuff, you're going to make me vomit.
Moon chew was her stress reliever. The sickly sweet substance wasn't to everybody's liking, but to Lyra, it was one of her favorite things. Lyra spat a wad of it into the cup she kept by her cot.
Your turn, Gil.
I'll draw a card instead. Lyra nodded her permission.
Andy is only mortal, Breck said to both girls. We don't know who the Zentarans are anymore, or what they're capable of. If they've really got the capability to kidnap Valin Cortas and cart him across the galaxy without being seen or heard, it makes me wonder what they've been up to all these years.
She was staring out Lyra's window, ignoring the game of Fleet, as if she were able to see Andy from this distance.
It makes me wonder what else they could do, or have done, without the rest of Mirabelle knowing.
We just have to hope, Lyra said, that Andy and Dex have thought of that, and that Soyina can truly be trusted. Because right now, she sighed as she remembered her aunt saying these very words years ago, when the Wexen pox swept across at Hera, hope is all we have.
Hope is a raging asshole, Gilly said.
Explain to me, Gilly, Breck said with a sigh. How exactly can an asshole rage?
Lyra choked on a sudden, unexpected laugh.
I swear, the two of you, you were both born with my brother's sarcastic soul.
You're dead,
Gilly said suddenly, slamming down three rare, red glowing cards. Lyra absentmindedly set down three more, the stats already having formed in her mind, the win instantaneous. Apologies, Gil. Gilly howled a round of fresh curses, and Breck silently shook her head, finally giving up on censoring the young gunner's language. They played three more rounds, and soon Lyra lost herself in the laughter of her friends, the swift dealing of cards from her fingertips, the revel in each and every win. It wasn't until she heard the knock on the door and turned to see Alfie walk in that the terrified ache returned to her chest. And a sudden smell came along with it, pungent and horrid enough to make her eyes water. Gilly jumped off the cot, her card scattering to the floor, their light winking out.
How did you escape?
Breck's head whipped to her.
What are you talking about, Gil?
Alfie glided over silently, his head tilted to the side. The smell arrived in full force with him.
With help from the Marauder's artificial intelligence system, I was able to unscrew the bolts on the waste bay door to remove myself from the room. It would be most appreciated if you would remove further attacks on me from your in-flight agenda. It is in the best interest of your mission.
Lyra sat there, trying to make sense of what had just happened. Then a large bark sounded from across the room as Breck doubled over laughing.
Gilly, you beautiful little demon! You actually did it! You locked him in the waste bay!
Gilly smiled smugly and crossed her arms. Then a thought came to Lyra.
Alfie, did you rebolt the door to the waste bay?
Alfie cocked his oval head. Lyra could see the gears moving in his body, as if he was deeply pondering her question.
No, I did not reassemble the door. The mechanic bots should be reassembling it now.
The three girls let out an exasperated moan.
Alfie, you idiot!
Gilly groaned.
We don't have mechanic bots on this ship.
Lyra bent over and nearly gagged from the smell. Before they could let all hell loose on Alfie, the ship's cool female voice spoke over their heads.
Incoming message for Lyra Meddy.
After a moment, Memory added,
Hello, Alfie.
Alfie glanced up.
Memory's voice is very enticing to my inner programming. I should like to converse with her when you are done, Lyra Meddy.
Oh, God stars, Breck said. Do not tell me our ship is about to hook up with the General's AI.
Lyra raced to the opposite wall, tapping a hollow screen embedded into the metal. Seconds passed before the screen lit up, and a message blinked into view.
She could practically feel the tension unwind from her muscles as she turned toward the waiting crew.
It's from Soyina,
Lyra said, smiling as she swept past Alfie and out into the hall, where she raced toward the bridge, her fingers already itching to grab the Marauder's wheel.
Time to go get our girl.
Chapter 33 Androma.
Androma, oh God stars, wake up!
She was lying in the darkness beside a burning ship. Her father's voice called to her, muffled as if he were underwater. His hands gripped her face, and they were warm against the frigid night. She wanted to keep sleeping, but the voice was desperate, a pleading, almost ruthless thing that begged her to wake. Andy opened her eyes and gasped. Cold. It was so cold. Dex hovered over her, his hands on either side of her face.
You're alive, he choked out.
His breath slipped away from him in a thick cloud. His eyes were wide, terrified as if he'd been staring at her corpse.
I didn't know if... I couldn't live if you were...
Shock overwhelmed her, and she struggled to keep the panic at bay. Her chest ached as if she'd been shot, each breath threatening to snap her apart. She tried to gasp in air, but there was a weight on her chest.
Can you breathe? Dex asked. Stay with me, Androma.
He began to pull something heavy off her. It felt as if he'd pulled a boulder from her chest. She gasped in a breath and realized with horror what had been on top of her. A corpse. Now when she breathed, she felt the cold press of something beneath her, like an uneven carpet. Slowly, with the rational side of her mind, the part that had been honed by years in military school and then, later, life on the Marauder with the girls, she gained control of her thoughts. Assess the situation. Remember to breathe. But God stars, the smell. Andy choked on it. She looked left and right, corpses all around her. She gasped in another breath. The weight of death and the pressing odor of decay were everywhere, filling the small transport ship they were in. Stiff, frozen fingertips pressed in between her shoulder blades. She felt the sharp prod of a bare foot leaning up against her knees. And finally, a woman's hairless head, her four eyes wide and unblinking as Andy turned her face to get a closer look at her surroundings.
Get me out,
Andy gasped again. In her mind, all she could see was Kaylee. Dead beside her in the transport ship, eyes closed, blood everywhere.
Get me out!
Dex pulled and shoved, and finally, finally, she was free. He wrapped his arms around her, and they practically tumbled backward. Together, Dex's arms around her, they sank back against a metal wall, the corpses near their toes looking as if they were trying to pull them back into the pile with dead, frigid fingers.
What the hell happened? Andy asked through her teeth.
Soyina shot us, Dex said. She actually shot us. He was still holding her. Andy knew she should pull away, but he was so warm, and the transport was so damned cold. Finally, after she stopped shivering, Andy removed herself from Dex's grasp and turned to look at their surroundings. Low, rounded metal ceilings seemed to press in on her from overhead, the walls equally claustrophobic. There was a single door across the small space, and as Andy breathed in again and quivered from the putrid stench, she felt a rumble beneath her. It was the unmistakable feeling of a ship's engine roaring as a pilot, likely behind that closed door, accelerated. Her body swayed with the motion, which meant the ship was small. The memories clicked into place. Soyina, that sneaky fiend. Andy could still see the way the revivalist had leveled a gun at them in their final moments inside Lunamare, still feel the pain that had bloomed across her body. Then darkness. A space as empty and unknown as a black hole. Soyina had made good on her promise to get them out of Lunamare. That much was true. But Andy had never imagined it like this. On a transport ship designed to cart dead bodies from Lunamare to the junkyard, out past dark matter, where dead ships and even deader people swam endlessly through the starless sky. Andy lurched to the right, and a wave of nausea hit her along with the scent. She wouldn't vomit. The bloody Baroness did not vomit. Andy took another gasping breath, forced her body upright, and promptly loosed the contents of her stomach. Into Dex's lap. His mouth opened and closed as he stared at the mess. Then, incredibly, he laughed. For a moment, she thought he'd lost his mind. But then the chaos of the past job and the realization that they had escaped Lunamare and lived to tell the tale swept over Andy. She laughed with him. When she could laugh no more, she got a good look at him for the first time in the dim emergency exit light above their heads. Beneath her sick mess, he was covered in dried blood that stained his black suit. A green and yellow bruise had spread across his forehead, as if he'd been smacked with a hammer the size of a fist. She'd seen bruises like this before, from Gilly's double-triggered gun, a stunner bullet, meant to incapacitate but not kill. Soyina, Andy thought again. She was devilishly smart, capable of completing their mission while saving herself at the same time. But this certainly hadn't been part of the plan. And what if Soyina's bullets hadn't been stunners? Black holes ablaze. Death had never felt so close. We actually did it, Andy said. We actually made it out. Then her heart lurched against her chest. Fallen. Andy turned, staring across the lumpy space, wide enough to fit 30 dead in a row. Help me find him, she demanded. Help me find Fallen. When Dex didn't move, Andy cursed and began to dig through the cold dead on her own, swearing to the stars that if she'd screwed this up after all they'd gone through, after all the lives she'd stolen. There, across the pile at the opposite end of the transport, lying face down, his shredded back open and bare. Andy crawled toward him, ignoring the disgust roiling in her gut, the feeling of wrongness spreading through her as her hands pressed down against frozen, scarred skin. He was cold when she reached him, but his pulse was there, a delicate flutter. Dex finally joined her, and together they heaved him over onto his side, careful not to touch the lacerations on his back. The wounds looked like sharp claws had shredded his skin, allowed it to heal, and shredded it all over again. Andy's gaze traveled to Valin's face. It was the first time she'd truly been able to stop and look at him, to study the way his features had changed in some places and stayed the same in others. His hair was shorn near the scalp, but she recognized the dark mahogany color he'd had years ago. His cheeks were shallow, the bones protruding at sharp angles, and his lips, once full, were colorless and empty. "It's a wonder he's not dead," Dex said. Andy found herself unable to respond. Staring at him was like staring at her past, but saving Valin, her one chance at redemption, hadn't changed the emptiness she still felt inside. The void was still there. Seeing Valin had simply opened it up, and now it threatened to suck her back in. "How long have we been out?" Andy asked. Dex shrugged. "Not sure. I woke up and then I saw you and..." She couldn't forget the haunted look in his eyes when he woke her. Soyina's voice echoed in her mind. "We didn't, you know. Your comrade wanted to whine like a baby about his feelings for you." But Dex wasn't allowed to have feelings. He wasn't allowed to look at Andy the way he had a few moments ago, wasn't allowed to hold her face as if he were cradling the world in his hands. Andy dismissed those thoughts. He'd been shocked. He'd thought his partner was dead.
Of course he'd been concerned. Lyra's probably wearing a hole in the floorboards of my ship with her pacing. Dex raised a single brow. My ship. She didn't argue this time, knowing in her heart that she'd already won the fight long ago. With effort, Andy tore her eyes away from Valin. The job wasn't done. She wouldn't relax until they were back on her ship, reunited with her crew, and had Valin taken to the medbay, where Alfie could get to work on healing him. Plus, the smell was starting to get worse. Asking for Dex's help wasn't one of her favorite things, especially after he'd just seen her lose control upon waking. But she knew he was the only way they'd be getting out of this damned transport before it emptied them out into the junkyard. Dex. She said his name like a sigh, hating the way it felt so familiar on her tongue. They were too close together, too alone, despite the corpses in Valin's unconscious form beside them. Androma? Dex replied, inclining his head. Do you remember the night you bypassed the locks on my door in your old junker ship? How could I ever forget? Dex's eyes glittered like stardust. Your nightgown was... Not a point of discussion right now, Andy hissed, cutting him off. There was the old familiar annoyance, she sighed. Can you do it again, to that door? He glanced past her shoulder, his eyes sparkling with a different sort of mischief as he nodded. Good, Andy said. She looked down at her boots and began to remove their laces. They were strong and sturdy, luckily not frayed from the fight in Lunamare. Then do it now. She coiled the bootlaces around her fists, then pulled them taut. The strands sang with a satisfying twang. Are you going to kill me with your shoelaces, Baroness? Dex asked. Andy looked at Valin's sleeping form, begging the Godstars to keep him breathing until they got him to the safety of the Marauder. No, she said as she began to crawl back across the bodies. But I am going to take care of the pilot once you get us through that door, and then you are going to fly us back to my ship. Not you? He raised a brow at her. After all the fear you've instilled in others, you're still too afraid to fly a... You don't know what you're talking about, Andy spat out. Does your crew know? Andy was silent, and he smiled like he knew her secret, like he'd very much enjoy keeping it for himself. 5 minutes later, Andy sat in the co-pilot's seat, a fresh corpse tossed in the pile behind the open door. Another tally, another face to haunt her. Dex took the throttle and angled the transport toward home, the glass starship that sat waiting like a gem in the starlit sky.
Chapter 34 Dex. Dex's senses were being wrongfully assaulted. The mystery of the missing AI had finally been solved, leaving an unhinged waste bay door in its place, and now the scent of unmentionable things had begun to swim its way through every deck of the ship, rivaling the smell of the corpses. To add insult to injury, Andy's crew of she-devils hadn't stopped following her around since they'd nearly crash-landed in the Marauder's small docking tunnel. Their voices were like gunshots to his head. The little fire-haired gunner had wanted to know if the blood on Andy belonged to her or some now ball-less bastard, to which the giantess had responded, "Of course it's not hers, Gil, and don't say bastard, say prick. Are you hungry, Andy?" All of which was followed by the adherent pilot circling Andy like a bird of prey, pecking at her cuts and bruises, then throwing icy glares in Dex's direction, as if he had been the one to give them to her. "This," Dex said as he sat in the med bay, letting the AI fawn over his own cuts and bruises, "is my own personal version of hell."
"You may experience some pain," Alfie said, tugging a little too hard on a fresh line of stitches on Dex's brow,
only adding to the already planets-wide list of things he wanted to drink himself into forgetting tonight. Andy glowered at him from the table next to his, then resumed whispering to her crew. She'd refused Alfie's help and given Dex a dismissive wave of her hand as thanks for helping her haul Valin's body into the medbay, and hadn't said a word to him since. It was so purely Androma to be as cold as a Solarin day, and that ounce of normalcy took a bit of the tension from Dex's shoulders as he quickly thanked Alfie for his stitches, then slid down from the table.
"I'm going to check in with the General," Dex announced,
Alfie turned back to Valin, who still lay unconscious on the table in the center of the medbay, eyes closed and bruises deepening in the bright white light. The crew didn't even lift their heads to acknowledge Dex, save for the littlest one, who quickly lifted two fingers in his direction, a Tenebrand signal for him to go screw himself. He sighed, working his sore jaw back and forth as he headed for the exit. The cool metal doors slid open, then closed shut behind him. Silence. It was so immediate, Dex almost wept with relief. For years he'd been on his own, doing things his way, keeping every reward for himself. Working with a crew, especially Andromas, was almost more than Dex could take sometimes. "Krevs, Dex," he told himself. "So many Krevs you could drown in them, and the glory of becoming reinstated as a guardian." He enjoyed being a rogue bounty hunter. It made quick money, but his whole life leading up to the moment he met Andy had been devoted to guardianship over Mirabel. Now he had a chance to get the status he'd lost back, and he'd taken it. He had his last bounty in hand, and both the Krebs and his title were so close he could hardly contain his triumph. He actually smiled as he made his way through the narrow hallway, then hauled himself up the ladder and onto the level above. His muscles cursed him for the effort. Dex passed through another narrow hallway, heading toward the meeting room. There were drawings tacked to the walls, mostly stick figures with heads blown apart, little red dots in the background that he assumed were splatters of blood. He'd have to keep an eye on the smallest marauder, and sleep with his pistol in his hand, and booby-trap his door with a paralytic fog, and not wander into dark corners where she might be waiting. Dex entered the meeting room and slumped into the chair at the head of the table, trying not to grimace as he realized his old prized seat no longer conformed to his body the way it used to. How he felt out of place in what had once been his home. He scooped up the comm box and, with a sigh and a hell of a lot of reluctance, hit send on the call. General Cortaz picked up immediately. "It's the middle of the night, bounty hunter." His face, projected on the wall across from Dex, seemed to have produced more wrinkles since the last time they'd spoken. Why he didn't take advantage of Arcardius's facial rejuvenation procedures, Dex didn't know. This had better be urgent. Dex leaned back in his seat and crossed his tattooed arms over his chest. The white constellation of the Foxling seemed to peer up at him. "Hello, General. I'm alive and well, thank you for asking." General Cortas was lying in a plush golden bed. Beside him, Dex could just make out the shadowy form of his wife. "My son," the general said without skipping a beat. His graying hair was mussed from sleep. "Do you have him?" Off-screen, his wife asked, "Is Valin safe? Is he coming home?" Dex took his time responding, relishing in the fact that, if only for a moment, the tables had turned. Now the general was at his mercy. "Speak, bounty hunter," General Cortas said, "or I'll make sure I cut your funds in half." "Not quite turned, then," Dex thought.
"We have him," he said. He picked at a fleck of dried blood on his forearm. "He's alive, but not well."
His wife burst into tears. Dex waited a moment while the general calmed her. "Details," General Cortas said when he turned back to the camera. He glanced sideways at his weeping wife. "Keep them delicate." Dex nodded.
"It seems they had less than pleasant ways of garnering information from him all this time in Lunamere."
The general's face twitched, but Dex went on.
"He's under Alfie's watch right now. The AI has assured me many times that Valin's health is of the highest priority."
"Good," the general said. Already he was raising a hand, snapping his fingers at some hidden attendant just off-screen. The red and blue lights of a servant droid flashed as General Cortas addressed it. "Send a message to my office. Let them know that my team has rescued Valin. Begin preparations for his return at once."
"We lost several hours in Lunamere," Dex interrupted. A few unforeseen problems, but we're estimating no less than a day's delay in returning him to you.
Make up the time, General Cortas said, his pale eyebrows knitting closer together, and I'll add to your pay.
Dex nodded. I'll do my best. If you'd hired me alone...
If I hired you alone, your head would be stuck on a spike in the darkest corner of Lunamere. I was right to bring in the Bloody Baroness.
The General's voice turned acidic when he